Now on BBC Radio Norfolk, the story of a television service which broadcast for decades here in the county, but which you've probably never heard of. Paul Hayes presents Nexus, Norfolk's forgotten TV station.
In the late 1970s, there were just three television stations available in Britain: BBC One, BBC Two, and ITV. Unless, that is, you happened to be in a very particular part of Norwich. Because if you lived on, say, Bluebell Road, and you were for some reason idly tuning your set around the dial on a weekday lunchtime, then it's just possible you might have picked up the fuzzy image of another station. One which was almost a secret, but which existed for decades, making all manner of programmes, and down the years had people working on it who went on to be film directors.
To have our own TV station was really something very special.
Comedians.
It was great fun, and I ended up with a career in show business.
Or even radio producers.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Nexus News. I'm Paul Hayes.
Well, the less said about my involvement, the better. But this is the story of Nexus, which was, for around 40 years or thereabouts, the student television station at the University of East Anglia.
We got out our scissors and started chopping up videotape and came up with this short look at some of the programmes made by Nexus Television in Norwich. We'll start with this particular piece of tape here, so if someone's got the sellotape.
The story of Nexus begins with two men who were not and never had been students at the UEA, but who are recalled with great fondness by anyone who played a part in the first 20-odd years or so of the station's history.
Malcolm Freegard.
Wally Tyack.
Malcolm Freegard.
Malcolm Freegard. And Wally Tyack.
Malcolm Freegard was the founder of the university's audiovisual centre, the AVC, and Wally Tyack was the chief technician there. Malcolm had been a television producer at BBC East, who'd made esteemed productions with the likes of John Betjeman before being recruited to the UEA in 1968 to create the AVC, which included the university's very own television studio used for making educational programmes. Also arriving at the UEA in 1968 as an undergraduate was Roger Penfound, who recalls that it wasn't long before the students were clamouring to put this novel facility to their own uses.
I think my memory is that I took myself off down to the Audiovisual Centre, and I think initially I was asking whether there was any possibility of working there, you know, as a sort of a part-time student job. Malcolm didn't seem quite so keen on that, but he did come up with the idea that he wanted students to get involved in making programmes as well. I didn't think Nexus actually was Malcolm's idea. That was so, we'll give him credit for that.
Here's what Malcolm Freegard himself had to say in a piece he wrote for the Times Higher Education Supplement in 1977.
Nexus was started in 1970 by the staff of the Audiovisual Centre as a measure of self-protection against the stream of aspiring geniuses arriving daily with requests to borrow a camera for the production of the ultimate documentary about life, sex, the truth, or whichever of the larger abstractions was currently claiming their attention.
That 1970 founding date is open to question, and it's thought Nexus may well have actually begun in 1968 or 69. What is agreed on is that it was Freegard who came up with the name, as another early member, Andy Gamble, recalls.
This was Malcolm's idea. It's either Greek or Latin, I can't remember which, for a knot or a link. And it was his view that the, you know, video and TV should link people together. I think it's quite a far-seeing view, actually, for the time. I was cameraman, actually, I think, for the first programme. We called it Aardvark because it was the first programme we did. And aardvark is the first word in the dictionary after A, I suppose. And it was kind of like a panorama type programme. We must have interviewed people to be on the programme. It was a sit-down, talking head type programme done in one take to tape.
It was shown on the TVs in the lecture theatres. So the lecture block existed. There were about, I think, about three lecture theatres there, and they were all equipped with TV for lectures, demonstrations, that sort of thing. And so they were opened at lunchtime for students to come in and watch.
One of the earliest bits of Nexus material known to survive comes from November 1973, when Colin Webb went to interview the latest act performing at Norwich's Theatre Royal.
We were regarded like any local press, you know, had it been BBC or Anglia or the newspaper. We were just rolled in as part of the press thing that they did when shows went up to Norwich.
The performers on this particular occasion were none other than Morecambe and Wise, who had some interesting thoughts on another comedy team.
I like Monty Python, but as I said, what I find is watching it...
Can I beg... Sorry, go ahead.
There's five or, you know, at times there's 5 or 6 minutes of utter boredom,
yeah, yeah.
And then there's 3 minutes of very funny, and then another 8 minutes of boredom. You know?
You see, what I... The way I feel about it is that it's... What they give you is, for want of a better expression, is university comedy.
Yeah.
You know, or college comedy, or whatever you want to call it.
Where it's come from, you know.
And that's what they give you. And I'm afraid that a lot of it is very unprofessional.
Yeah.
And this irritates me, being a professional. But what does make me laugh really makes me laugh. And what doesn't make me laugh bores me stiff.
I see. Okay. You
know. But we're still friends, aren't we?
Yeah.
This being the BBC, of course, we have to be fair and balanced. So... Monty Python member Sir Michael Palin.
I was quite intrigued, really, and that was a very interesting little piece of an interview there. It just shows that though the quality wasn't great, you got exactly their feelings, you know, came through so well. I suppose I was maybe a little hurt, possibly, that they didn't think we were screamingly funny, but now I look at it, I can see exactly what they were talking about and what they were trying to say there. Which was really that we're from different worlds. What they saw in us was sort of little fly-by-nights come along with a slightly sort of patronising university humour, slightly imposing on their ground.
Among the students appearing on Nexus in the mid-1970s was someone who would himself go on to become a nationally famous comedian.
And welcome to the third test match with the Brian Smith 11. And here's Brian Smith himself, the main batsman, opening at number one and going to the crease and getting ready. And my, there's a fine English cricketer for you. What style? We shall shortly say, yes, here's Brian Smith, the wicketkeeper, getting ready, warming up, doing the usual exercises.
My stage name is Arthur Smith. My real name's Brian, although my middle name's Arthur, and I used to be known as Arthur a lot at school. My friend Adam, he seemed to get involved in it, and I became friends with Adam fairly early on. And he used to organise sort of strange things that we did on Nexus, I remember. But I remember it being quite fun and being happy to join in, because I was always a bit of a show-off.
I think Brian Smith won that one. The commentator was Brian Smith, and now for something completely different.
An example of one of Nexus's feature programmes to survive from the 1970s is A Student Guide to Norwich, although those making it didn't perhaps know the city quite as well as they thought they did.
Moving on at night... Why not try the Jacquard? It's in Magdalen Street and you'll need to be a member, which is only 50p a year.
Magdalen Street? This isn't Oxford, you know.
Okay. So we've shown you places to satisfy fleshly longings. At least it did a hell of a lot for Ted, the cameraman.
Ted, the cameraman, was Ted Hayton.
The actual recorder unit was an open reel machine and it weighed a ton. And to cut that thing around Norwich, you ended up with a dislocated shoulder after not very long. It was not easy to do.
We could have gone to Scamps or Crocker's or one or two others, but the cameraman liked the angle of this shot so much that we decided to stick with it.
Arwell Parry recalls some of the other programmes from later in the 1970s.
We had programmes like Sights for Sore Eyes, which is a review of the movies and plays and things on both in the university and in Norwich.
Hello. Our special guest on Sights for Sore Eyes today is someone who is in Norwich for the duration, Richard Bryars. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Ian.
Your voice is going. It's not too good.
Yes, our voice is virtually gone now, so I will speak as high as I can. I've been doing 12 shows a week at the Theatre Royal Norwich, which accounts for it. It's not my fault. It's not living it up or anything.
That's in Babes in the Wood. That's your first pantomime.
Yes, and most probably the last.
Score, which was the Monday sports programme. You know, usually somebody went out and videoed a rugby match or something. And things like that, basically. All stuff to keep the student body entertained.
A genre in which Nexus only rarely dabbled down the years was drama, but it was something which was occasionally done, particularly in the 70s, as Philip Bird and Maxine Ostwald remember.
Philip asked me very kindly to perform something, which was not just something, but Not I by Samuel Beckett. And I don't know if you know the piece, but it's literally just a mouth speaking for 15 minutes, 15-minute monologue.
And I thought on a screen, this would be extraordinary, because you'd see it well, quite big in the centre, with just nothing around it. And Maxine said she'd go for it, which was astonishing. And she discovered that actually learning it and getting it word perfect, I don't know if you know the works of Samuel Beckett, but you know, every dot, 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 every dot in the dot, dot, dot matters. She really wanted to get it absolutely right, and of course I did. And you've got students watching it who might be, you know, following along in the text.
What happened is that we recorded the monologue. I recorded it, and then it was played into my ears through headphones. And then I sort of kind of mimed it in a way, I think. It actually felt to me like real television because it was quite professional. I mean, they had the huge cameras that you used to see at the beginning of Grandstand. You know, they were really heavy, big cameras there in the studio.
That Maxine recalls such cameras suggests that Not I was one of the Nexus productions made in the university's own television studio at the Audiovisual Centre. While this continued to be used for some shows, by the mid-1970s, the station had really kicked into gear when it gained its own small studio in the new Student Union building, University House, directly above what was soon to become a well-known local gig venue, the LCR. David Mathewson.
Two of us managed to get ourselves onto the Student Union Finance Committee by some fluke, and therefore, you know, we're very keen on advancing. The Nexus was a really good thing and good for communications, and the union could use it for communicating to students, and that really it was a good investment, so you should put money in it, which they did. On a temporary basis that I think lasted probably 15 or 20 years before it was eventually moved out. But once Nexus had the ability to record its own stuff outside of the Audiovisual Centre, then of course it could do what on earth it wanted, which it did.
Perhaps the most famous, or indeed infamous, example of Nexus doing whatever it wanted came in May 1975, when the station teamed up with the university's RAG Society for an incident which was to go down in UEA folklore.
This is Radio 4 from Norwich. Now here's the East Anglian News, read by Michael Drake. Students at the University of East Anglia have admitted responsibility for an elaborate practical joke played on people living in a broadland village. The hoaxers convinced the people of Horning that coypew, large South American water rats which live in the Broads, were carrying a mysterious disease.
At the time, Adam Wide was running Nexus.
There was straw mats at each end of the village, disinfected for cars going over. We sprayed the wheels of cars as they came in and out of the village.
Have you heard any talk about epidemic being spread by the coypew?
No.
In this area? Oh, that's fine. If we could just disinfect your wheels. Sorry, could you come here, please?
Arthur Smith.
So, we all went down to Horning and I had a white coat on. I am in the little video of it somewhere there with a big afro haircut and glasses. So if you see someone like that, that's me.
Yes, they're like enormous rats, really, but they're quite harmless to people. They're rather ugly things, but they're particularly rampant around this area. But if you don't know about them, it doesn't really matter too much. Okay. You can go on. Thanks a lot. Sorry to
have
disturbed you, sir.
We had identification cards. I just found mine a while back and thought, what is this? And it said, you know, Brian Smith, professor, something or other, you know, with a proper... It was all kind of carefully worked out. Not by me, might I say, but I was given one of those and I showed it if need be and pretended to be a very serious scientist.
To our horror, a local policeman came along. Oh, what's going on here then? In his police car. And because I talked vaguely posh at the time and had a suit, I was sent off to blag with the policeman. And the whole thing was documented lovingly and funnily by Nexus.
But of course, all the way along, we were laughing hugely inside.
At this very moment, Adam is that policeman something terrible. The Eastern Evening News have succumbed to our devious plans and we're about to leave having completely confused the whole of Norfolk.
I mean, it was ridiculous. We got on the front page of The Guardian as a real story and they were so embarrassed that, anyway, then Look East picked it up.
Chris Ward and Adam Wide helped organise it. Adam, what was the reaction of the villagers?
Well, they were really great, actually. It was very refreshing. I think this was the best part of the whole afternoon, that the local inhabitants were just so friendly.
We were very excited when it went into The Guardian. I mean, we were pretty excited when it hit the local paper. And then it went to the Guardian, and then the Vice Chancellor had to apologise as well as Chris and Adam. We apologised dutifully, but I think we all thought it was a massive laugh. I mean, these days you could put it in for the Turner Prize, maybe.
University House, or Union House as it is these days, not only gave Nexus a base for its own studio, it also gave them an audience, with its main method of reaching students through most of the station's life being via a monitor in the building's foyer, as Anne Wilkins remembers.
There would be probably about 50 students eating their lunch on the floor of UH watching, whether they were really interested or whether they were just eating their lunch, and it was kind of like in the background, I've no idea.
Being so close to the viewers came in handy, as recalled by Mark Hodgson, Martin Heath and Simon Litton, who were Nexus members in the 80s and 90s.
It was from this room that they'd run down the corridor to see what how.
So if you thought something was a bit quiet, someone would have to come out of this door, go running down the corridor and lean over the balconies and see if they could hear it well enough.
Absolutely, which is not great, but there was no other way of doing it.
No, I remember doing that. I remember doing that and sending somebody rushing out to the main area just to make sure we were actually broadcasting sound, and sometimes we weren't broadcasting sound.
That's pretty much what we were doing too. We would just go out onto the balcony and look down, and we could see and hear the reaction as it was going out on that screen.
This is the wonderful thing. If ever we needed to know what the ratings were, we could just walk down the corridor from the transmission room and see what our ratings were. If people were turned away from the TV or asleep, then we knew they weren't interested. But also, they could easily walk up to us and say what they wanted to watch.
If you want to see a video, bring up your request to Nexus Television. I don't mean vomit it, I mean bring it up and write it down on a piece of paper, and we'll show any video you want to see. Do it now. Come up to Nexus with your request.
Early 80s member Vince Rogers.
We could do one thing that no TV station could do, is that we could actually hear our audience, because we have a control room, it is sort of on the first floor. But if our doors were open and all the doors down the corridor were open, and something funny was said, you could hear the laughter coming up the corridor. It was like the most amazing kind of, feedback.
This also helped Nexus to attract new members, as Andy Puddiford explains.
All of this looked very cool to me. So I just sort of trotted up to the offices upstairs in University House one day, put my head round the door and said, hello, guys. Do you need any help?
Another of those students who was intrigued enough by what was being shown to want to go up and join in was someone who would later become a BAFTA-winning director of films such as Bend It Like Beckham, Gurinder Chadha.
I know one of the things I was very impressed with was there were two or three other smaller rooms, which were sort of smaller common rooms, which had TVs in them, and it used to broadcast to those rooms as well. And I was just amazed at the technical prowess of that.
Yes, for a while in the late 70s and early 80s, Nexus did actually have its own very low-powered transmitter, as Arwell Parry explains.
Basically what happened was we had a UHF modulator which transmitted our programmes on channel 37. It was very low power, basically. We only had it so that we could transmit to the TV rooms on the other side of the building so that people could watch them in there as well. But I do believe that at one stage we took the attenuators off for a bit of maintenance, and for a very short time the signal could be picked up over a wider area. There was a rumour that it was picked up near the railway station at one time, but I couldn't swear to that at all.
David Matthewson.
At the time I was living in at the back of the railway station, in between the railway station and Carrow Road, in a flat, and indeed you could pick it up fairly noisily on occasions, depending on the climatic conditions, but it would say you couldn't really watch it.
Mike Redaway.
It was basically a very, very weak experiment, which was which I think it sort of worked, and I think we were slightly surprised when we heard all the stories and then turned it off.
However, it was still being used when Mark Hodgson was a Nexus member in the early 80s.
And that made us quite nervous in case it reached the general public. It was a tweakable transmission, and I'm sure we tweaked it as low as possible to keep it on campus.
I don't see why anybody would actually have been tuned to that channel, so they probably wouldn't have seen it, even if it was possible.
Broadcasting in University House, to the foyer, hamburger bar, senior common rooms and TV rooms. This is Nexus Television.
This little dalliance with pirate broadcasting begs the question, who, if anyone, was actually keeping an eye on Nexus and what they were doing?
Nexus pretty much had a free rein because in those days student union had pretty much free rein, and there was very often a state of almost undeclared warfare running between the university senate and university facilities people and the student union. And so University House was, despite being provided by the university, was very much regarded as the union's territory. And what went on in there was entirely down to the student union. But when the lavatories needed cleaning, these from the estates people come and unblock the lavatories.
Vince Rogers.
When you're a student, you think you're operating outside the law. It didn't apply to you somehow in your own little student bubble. We just simply didn't think that copyright laws and the like applied to us, maybe libel laws.
Arwell and Mike do recall one 70s stunt which raised a certain amount of ire.
Generally, we did whatever we liked. We did once get a complaint from the porters because we'd heraldited a 50 pence piece to the payment and filmed what happened.
We did get a minor ticking off from that because apparently several members of staff tried to pick this up and it was considered to be that we were making fun of people or trying to indicate they were dishonest by trying to pick up a 50 pence off the floor.
Porters were seen trying to scrape it up and take it away, and they thought it put them in a bad light as if they were going to pocket it.
But I mean, that's the only time I can remember having any direct communication from the university as such.
Nexus may have been based on Union territory, but that didn't stop them taking pot shots at the institution in one particular programme, as another 70s member, Bob Clifford, recalls.
It had the name Knocking Shop, a satirical programme looking at what was going on in a student's union.
It was basically a sort of three heads talking, cut from one head to another head to another head, saying parts of sentences.
Hello, and welcome to Knocking Shop.
The programme that makes grown men wee. The programme that wages a constant war against...
bureaucracy.
Watneys.
Tedium. What a Magnificat programme.
Leave Jenny's Carson out of this, please.
And this edition of Knocking Shop is concerned with
the elections.
And just knocking the student union a bit. And it was very entertaining, a bit irreverent. And it attracted quite a large audience. When Knocking Shop was on in the union foyer area where we had one of the TVs, there would be quite a lot of students would be watching it to see what the latest news was of what the investigative skills of Nexus had turned up.
Let us take things in their proper order.
First, we should take a look at the long and indecipherable words and clichés that pepper the candidates' manifestos.
Nexus didn't just show their own programmes. They also took advantage of their space-age ability to actually record BBC and ITV shows off the air to aid in luring in the viewers to their lunchtime screenings, as Ed Goodridge explains.
We used to rerun some programmes from sort of off-air, like BBC programmes that had been on. We would tape them and then rerun them at lunchtime. So things like 40 Towers, for example, we used to rerun that at lunchtime. We'd tape it and re-show it. I'm not sure whether I should admit to that or not, but we did do that. I'm sure it wasn't allowed, but we did. And that used to increase the audience. So, we'd get a good audience for our news because it was followed by a rerun of 40 Towers that went out the night before or something of that sort.
Mark Hodgson, Arwell Parry and Andy Puddiford remember one show being particularly popular.
In the evenings, they were busy watching films, going to concerts and everything, so they weren't watching a lot of TV. So we would time shift broadcast TV for them to watch. Like Doctor Who was popular. There's always somebody wanting to see Doctor Who.
Usually something like Doctor Who or Space 1999, something like that.
Programmes that have been recorded from the BBC normally, like Doctor Who.
Baltimore Nexus sees the welcome return of the classic science fiction series Doctor Who. Doctor Who, just a part of the new autumn season on Nexus, your television service.
By the end of the 1980s, the appeal of sci-fi had given way to that of soap opera, as Martin Heath remembers.
The reason that they would gather round the monitor then to watch Nexus was because we showed our own programmes, but then followed that by Neighbours, the soap opera. So we would broadcast Neighbours in the hope that those people who desperately wanted to see Neighbours, which appeared to be most of the campus, would at least see some of our programming if they arrived slightly early for Neighbours.
I'm Jeremy Patterson, you're watching Nexus. God knows why.
Wander down Pottergate in the very heart of the city, where Robin's bargain records and tape shops are waiting for you to fork out your pennies for an incredible variety of sound from Grease to the Ramones.
No need to be like Eric. Go to Robbins.
Mike Redaway.
We actually sold advertising. I think we charged £30 per term. We would make an advert, and it would be guaranteed it would go out twice a day. We had Captain America's Hamburger Heaven, and we also had Adnams Beer. And we came up with a comedy series of adverts featuring Michael, the typical student, who always had some problem that was solved by drinking a bottle of beer. And I ended up being this typical student, doing a very fast run from the campus over to the village.
Here is Michael. He's a typical student. He has a lecture in the village in 30 seconds' time.
I mean, they were fun to do. It raised us. I think we're into a couple hundred pounds a term, which went a long way towards the latest updated piece of equipment.
You're listening to Nexus, Norfolk's forgotten TV station on BBC Radio Norfolk with me, Paul Hayes. While the content of Nexus was often colourful figuratively, that wasn't always the case literally, as Mark Hodgson explains.
I arrived in 1980 and we had black and white cameras in the studio. There was a wonderful colour camera. I think it was broadcast quality, but it was a portable camera. Portable, I say portable, it was extremely heavy, but the colour camera was great, but of course you only had one colour camera. So cutting between colour and black and white in the studio wasn't really a done thing. So we'd do black and white shows live, and we'd do, if it was pre-recorded, we'd do it all single camera with the portable colour camera.
What do you want me to do? I can't hear a thing.
The colour camera's in here now.
What?
The colour camera's in here, Pete.
The colour camera's in there?
Yes,
I suppose that's it.
You can cut to it. You see? So I'm in colour and in black and white. There you go.
Andy Puddiford.
It's interesting that that wasn't a turn-off at that time. So we're talking about 82, 83. So, yeah, I think we just got away with it. And the guys probably got away with it for a few more years after that.
By the time that Martin Heath was running Nexus at the end of the 1980s, however, it had become an issue.
Most of the students who were around then can't remember anything being in black and white apart from security cameras, and then they suddenly come to university and find that we're broadcasting live in black and white.
As well as problems caused by things staying the same, as the 90s dawned, there was also an issue prompted by a change in student life.
We're on that cusp where perhaps if you were slightly more affluent as a student, you'd bring your television with you. But what that meant, of course, is that we didn't have this kind of captive community of people wanting to watch Australian soap operas.
Nexus also found itself faced with a rival for the affections of both the student audience and those interested in being part of making campus media, something which had been talked about at the UEA for many years and an idea which had even been the subject of a Nexus documentary in 1976. A radio station.
But this is all theory at the moment, mere ideas that may or may not come to fruition. Now, with the magic power of the TV camera, we take you into what could be the transmission studio of UEA Radio.
Steve Howard was something of a media impresario at the UEA. A member of Nexus in the late 80s, he went on to establish the current version of the student newspaper Concrete, and before that, in 1990, he finally launched a UEA radio station. Livewire.
When it launched, they got lots of positive PR. John Peel came to do the opening, etc. And so I think they felt that Nexus, as a means of communicating with people, was perhaps not as strong as it was, and it became treated more like a student society, same as kayaking or something, rather than being an integral part of the student union and how they communicated to their members. And again, because of this new shiny radio station, I think a lot of people who perhaps had interest in media careers or a genuine interest in media in general perhaps didn't want to do clunky old 1960s TV. There's a shiny new radio next door.
My worry when I discovered the student radio station starting was that actually, technologically, it's a lot easier to have a radio station than it is a television station. So I realised this was a bit of a threat, but the fact that Steve also dedicated some of his time to the television station, I couldn't really get that cross with him.
But there were certainly some within Nexus who just saw it as trying to spoil their game. I don't think they were kind of perhaps focused on the fact that, you know, life was moving on technically and in lots of other ways. So yeah, they were not happy.
Livewire, though, was not the only problem. The student union itself had also decided that the time had come to pull the plug.
I was basically told that, we've decided it's unsafe for you to carry on. The equipment hasn't been electrically tested. There are obviously wiring problems because the whole place has been put together by just student volunteers. And it's unsafe, so we're going to close you down. And so then I think one of us contacted the Eastern Daily Press and said, look, this is terrible. Award-winning TV station with all these very well-known alumni. And eventually we got a sort of reprieve. The station survived long enough for me to graduate, which is the biggest thing that I was worried about.
After Martin's departure and the launch of Livewire in 1990, however, Nexus's regular broadcasts did come to an end. The station survived in name only as a kind of video production club, and that might have been it, had it not been for a new group of students who arrived at the UEA in 1992. Among them were Stuart Campbell and Simon Litton.
That was only once we started to find out that it had a history and it had once had a glorious past, we set about trying to bring that back to life.
Over the course of the next year or two, we got a new camera, we got a decent vision mixer, and got it to the point where we were actually got the cabling put in and were broadcasting into the TVs down into the main restaurant cafe area in Student Union House.
We had a lot of scrounging missions to Anglia TV for kit, literally on their doorstep begging for cameras, cables, anything at all we could make programs with. We somehow convinced the union to give us control of every screen in the building. And that included all the screens in the bar downstairs. It included the screens in the LCR and screens as you walked into the building. So I think we'd commandeered control of 5 monitors in the building.
So having achieved all this, what were they actually showing? Nicola Daly was another of the 90s members.
I ended up doing a music show called, which makes me laugh now where I think about the title, it was called Grr. Which is just hilarious. I think Jessica Kiang had an art show called Swank. And we did film reviews and all sorts of things. And I think they were doing a program called Our House. And looking back on it, you think, Our House, that's a really early reality show, because basically it was just following the students that lived in, I think it was Stuart Campbell, who was the president of Nexus at the time that I sort of was a young first year. I'm sure it was done in his house. And I was just blown away. I was like, this is how they make, you know, the stuff that we watch on TV. And then I was hooked then.
One interesting aspect of all this is how much Nexus's 90s revival paralleled the station's 70s heyday. Once more, the university's audiovisual centre helped get them going.
We begged, borrowed and stole from the UEA TV studio, from Wally Tyack.
Members got themselves onto the student union to support the cause.
Quite luckily, I ended up getting onto the union, which, if I dare be so bold as to say, did turn to Nexus's advantage more than once.
They used national programmes to help hook in the audience.
We'd been cheeky enough to control all the Sky feeds into the LCR and the Union Bar.
And in May 1995, exactly 20 years after the Great Koipu hoax, they once again managed to get themselves onto Look East.
Tomorrow, the University of East Anglia will put the latest technology on display as part of its Open Day. From their computer, they'll be sending pictures and sound around the world.
We hosted the... what I still believe, unless anyone can prove us wrong, is the first ever live stream for 24 hours.
The internet was a very new thing at that point, so it wasn't clear to me exactly how it was working, but we had a couple of fairly technical guys in our technical team who set it up for us.
Ben Frank and Stuart Bamford and Andy Savory. So it's three guys from electronic engineering who I think had been working on or doing some projects on that kind of technology right in its infancy. And I think they were probably fortunate enough that we had this effective laboratory to test this stuff in. We just ended up creating 24 hours of non-stop programming, which was a mixture of live play-ins, pre-records.
This is a bit of a surprise to you, but we are actually broadcasting to the whole world at the moment on the internet. It's never been done before, and you're the first kid to be globally broadcast on the internet, and so say hello to the world.
Hello world.
We were to an extent monitoring. We could see when people were connecting and seeing what we were doing. We had some viewers from the United States, I seem to recall.
We've just got a live message from somebody in Pennsylvania. What was his name?
Tyler?
His name is Tyler. We've got a picture of him on the screen. He's wearing a baseball cap. It looks like he's in his bedroom or something.
And I do remember saying, I've got a feeling that, you know, in the future we'll be able to have video conversations with our grandparents on the other side of the world, because we can do it today, so this will be in our home tomorrow.
And very soon, grandparents in this country will be able to not only talk to their grandchildren on the other side of the world, but also to be able to see them through the computer.
That's right, they will be able to.
Very exciting. Stuart Campbell, thank you very much for joining us.
Some aspects of Nexus remained similar throughout the station's history. For example, there was almost always a music show, with grrr in the 90s, as we've heard, and in the 2000s there was reverb. But Nexus's longest-lasting music programme, from the mid-70s to the late 80s, was Sounds Peculiar, co-presented in this clip from 1981 by Gurinder Chadha and a punk named Glenn.
The Sounds Peculiar production team would like to apologise for the opening sequence of this programme, and I'd like to say that it's all Gurinder's fault, because she's really
not my fault at all.
Acting the fool, as usual.
Oh my God, Sounds Peculiar. I have not heard that for about 40 years. Oh my gosh, that's right. There was a music show called Sounds Peculiar.
Anyway, that was the beat. It's a shame that most of their riffs are ripped off straight from various reggae albums from the past, but never mind.
Oh no, that's awful. What a terrible thing to say. Oh my God, forgive me, Rankin Roger. Well, I obviously sounded quite full of myself. You know what it was if you presented anything to do with music, somehow culturally you were supposed to be really opinionated, you know, and Glenn had this kind of off the cuff, I don't care if I'm here or not here, kind of a nihilistic punk attitude.
The next record up is by someone called the Eurythmics, and I'm told that features Annie Lennox or someone like that. Well, I thought that was an Olympic runner, but anyway, it's called Never Gonna Cry Again.
Doesn't come in.
Original title, isn't it?
And I was obviously trying to sound intelligent and rebellious, but not really succeeding, I think. But Glenn was a very funny character, actually, on campus, because he didn't look like a student and he didn't act like a student, you know, and I think he was an anarchist, actually.
The Anti-Nowhere League was supposed to be playing, but I suppose word got around Horsham and all these people are saying, oh, we're going to get our room smashed up, you know. So the league have unfortunately cancelled, and I think that just demonstrates how spineless some students are, because, I mean, and, you know, how sort of paranoid, because, I mean, nothing like that would have happened. I mean, well, only a little bit.
As well as Nexus's own recordings, Sounds Peculiar also used videos and performances recorded from BBC and ITV shows, as Mark Hodgson explains.
So it would be bits of Top of the Pops, Whistle Test, The Tube, Riverside. I'd try and pick what was the most interesting stuff for the students who would not possibly have watched all of those shows.
Well, we don't get too excited, but we've actually got a good record on the programme now. This is John Cooper Clarke.
Outside the takeaway.
Shut up. This is a John Cooper Clarke from, I think it's from Whistle Test, this.
Yes, it is.
And it's It Man and Bonsoir Glamour Girls.
Something else we did was record concerts. If we could get clearance, we'd go down into LCR and set up all the cameras we had and record a whole concert. Some people were very interested in getting interviews. And the only interview I knew that was actually they turned up for was Johnny Marr. When the Smiths were in.
I know you've been asked this question hundreds of times, but how did you first meet Morrissey?
Back in Manchester, I'd heard of him when I was about 14, I think.
Nick Mottershead was a Nexus member in the late 70s.
At the end of the concert, most of the bands used to come up to the control room and we showed them back the recordings. So as well as videoing the concerts, we also got to meet the band.
Stuart Campbell.
We had Faith No More turn up, who were superb, actually. So we took the whole band down to Breakers. I don't know if it's still called Breakers now, which was quite possibly the worst burger bar in East Anglia. Can you feel it? See it? You want to be? If you can't, then it doesn't matter anyway. We fed them, took them up into the Nexus studio, did a live interview down into LCR and the Union Bar. Let them go off, do their gig, and then picked up some Vox Pops with them afterwards.
I'm Mike. I play in a band called Faith No More. You're watching Nexus UTV, right?
Right.
Nick and Stuart also both have memories of the station managing to be at the heart of some big local news stories.
When the Sex Pistols were banned from appearing at UEA and there was a big student protest, and Nexus were obviously on hand to do interviews with the students as to why, you know, why they didn't think this was a good idea, and interviews with the university as to why they thought that that Sex Pistols should be banned.
When we went to interview Robert Chase in Carrow Road for our, you know, City Sports Roundup, somehow we'd managed to get tickets to the game that evening, and we were there with our cameras and we filmed this riot where people were squashed and stampeded by horses, which was the most bizarre thing at Carrow Road. Anglia bought that off us at the time, and I think we were over the moon that we ended up with 200 quid. Something like that.
News was a regular feature on Nexus all through the decades. In the 70s...
Hello, here's the Nexus News for Tuesday, the 11th of May. First, the headlines. Accommodation, the election build-ups, and the Vice-Chancellor's report. First of all, accommodation.
The 80s...
Now we have a video item on the Sainsbury Centre extension. The builders apparently have descended on the Sainsbury Centre, and here to tell us what exactly is happening is Martin Heath.
The 90s.
A local demonstration against the Criminal Justice Bill was held on Saturday, the 24th of September. A large number of people participated in the demonstration.
And into the 2000s.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Nexus News. I'm Shoshana Wilson. Our first story this week is about the History Department. There's been much debate amongst both tutors and students alike about the proposed controversial changes to the structure.
Ed Goodridge.
When I joined in 1974, we had a meeting and everyone was talking about what they could do. And I sort of quite fancied doing some news because I was a bit of a news junkie, and I became the station's first news editor.
Looking through my own Nexus archive tapes, I came across this report on a protest on campus in 2004.
As you can see, it's a busy day down here in the square. We've come down to the speechless protest, which is arguing against the closure of the drama and NLT departments, and we thought we'd see what was happening.
This is not a party political occasion. I know Ian Goodson, I know, can't be here today, but I know he'd stand alongside me as well.
The speaker there was the then Conservative candidate for the North Norfolk seat, Ian Dale, well known these days as a radio presenter and political pundit. 20 years before that, however, in the mid-80s, he'd been a Nexus newsreader himself.
We all wrote our own scripts. There was nobody else involved in that. And then I had them typed out in quite large font. And the trick is to not look down too much. So you need to have sort of reasonably large font to enable you to just sort of see the next sentence, and so not have to look down, because there's no way you can learn the script. But we didn't have... autocue.
I vaguely remember trying to build one with an overhead projector at one time, and have someone sort of, you know, turn the handle and the script would sort of go up onto a screen. I don't think that worked terribly well. I believe, and in some of the old archive material you've dug out, it looks as if I've got the script is sort of blue tacked to the camera under the lens, and I'm trying to read it with great difficulty from a distance.
I would read the news with a student colleague, Anne Wood. She was on my course as well. It was an appointment to view, because most of the time Anne and I would corpse at something or other. And we know how everybody on television loves to see presenters who corpse. Well, we kind of did it every week. We didn't necessarily intend to, but it became quite a thing.
Steve Howard and Martin Heath were involved with the news later in the 1980s.
I think it was generally accepted as the source of news and what was going on at campus at that time. And that changed very quickly after that. The pace of change, even when I was there for a few years, was really quite astonishing. But people definitely talked about what they'd seen there, and it was interesting. You could see the attitude of university officials, student union officials. They wanted to be on programmes that were made. They wanted to get their point across. They took it quite seriously.
That was a collection of filmed reports, again, some of which were pretty good, and live interviews, which generally weren't so good, and looking at the current affairs of the day and the motions that the Students' Union came up with, that sort of thing.
Stuart Campbell.
We had a once-weekly news programme that was a really good bit of work, actually, when I think back to how we'd managed to get that together. It was presented, we had guests, and we played in inserts, and we'd pretty much copied the format from Anglia TV. the entire set from their news programme somehow made its way into the LCR. We also had the news desk, complete with all the monitors and auto key cable routing. So we had the whole Anglia News set in our building and made the most of it.
The Nexus News, in all its various forms, existed to try and make students more aware of events on campus. But how much awareness was there on campus of Nexus itself down the years?
When I started, maybe if this was just my impression, but I don't think anybody had a clue about it. I think by the time I left, I think there was a great awareness. I think it's during those years from 73 onwards that it became very much part of student union life.
There was a huge awareness of Nexus because I think we were just so in your face and we were absolutely everywhere. And so you couldn't really ignore it.
There was a lot of awareness throughout campus about Nexus, and the very fact that University House, Union House, whatever it's called, used to fill up just when we were broadcasting in that lunchtime slot and then just disperse immediately afterwards. I think, I'd like to think, was some indicator of actually, you know, we were actually quite popular.
Sometimes 100 people turned up and, you know, we knew we were getting through. I mean, the place would be full. If we had a special event, people would be hanging off the balcony as well as the main floor.
Oh, 100% awareness, definitely. Because of this TV that sat in the middle of Union House, there was this routine at lunchtime where everyone would go and buy a roll from the charity roll-selling place upstairs. SASAF, yeah, it was a scholarship fund for South African students, which was a big political issue at the time. So people would go and buy one of these rolls, sit on the horrible carpet, watch the 30-minute news show that we produced.
I think people knew what Nexus was, and I think most people knew that it had quite a history as well, and it had been around for years and years. It was almost something that had a reputation from years gone by rather than a reputation for what it was doing now.
I think it was probably the first time in my life that I was looking at a screen, looking at pictures which hadn't been sent to me by some sort of corporation, by the BBC, ITV or whoever it was. It was recognisable people with recognisable student hair talking about things which actually pertain to my life.
I think we were really lucky at UEA to have Nexus, because today anybody can make a film and that's brilliant as well. But this was actually, you know, to have those, you know, to have the facilities to make television and to show it to people, it was quite unusual, I suppose.
These days, people almost literally have their own TV station, every individual. If you want one, you can have one. You can go live from wherever you want. You know, the contrast between what's available now and what was available then. To be able to access a functioning TV station was just amazing.
I think there was certainly a novelty value back in the 90s. I would notice that when we would turn up to film something that we would attract attention. You know, oh, there's somebody with the camera, what's that about? Whereas now nobody would blink at seeing a camera being pointed at themselves.
It was a privilege and we were aware of it. And I think we were really aware that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't accessible, and people were impressed with it. And it made you remember at the time that we were doing something really special.
It seemed like a very radical thing that we could have our own TV station. I mean, back then, I think there was only BBC and ITV. So the idea that we could be on screen doing funny stuff was really quite inspiring. So Nexus, yeah, but is it still going? What's the score there now?
Well, there's the question. What is the score there now? Sadly, it seems that after Nexus's 90s resurgence, by the end of that decade, things had gone rapidly downhill. In 1998, the campus newspaper Concrete quoted the student union as being unhappy about the Nexus output, or rather, the lack of it.
We're determined that they produce something this year. Only about an hour of Nexus TV was shown in the Hive last year, which for something that consumes such a lot of money is a waste. If it continues to be operated as a club for techies by people who just muck about with the equipment, then we're really going to have to review what they do.
Which raises an interesting point. What really is the purpose of student media? Is it actually for the audience, or more for the people who make it? Martin Heath.
If it ever was a thing that was primarily for the audience, I don't think it was while I was there. I think it was primarily really for the enjoyment / ambition of the people who took part in it.
Arwell Parry.
We would definitely have to say it was done for the audience. The Students' Union would never contemplate it, given us the amount of money they did, if it was just for our own pleasure, I don't think.
Mike Redaway.
I think we were sort of 50-50. We were there to enjoy ourselves, and that is the purpose of any university society. So we enjoyed making the programmes. We certainly aimed them at people, and we did have an audience, and people did come to watch the programme.
By 2003, Concrete were reporting that Nexus no longer had any regular means of showing its programmes at all, with the station's secretary at the time, Chloe Hall, telling the paper,
"To be honest, even if the programmes don't end up being broadcast, we just make them for the fun of it."
As you might imagine, Concrete were rather less than impressed with this.
"Quite frankly, it's just not on. It may be thriving down some unventured corridor of Union House, but to everyone else, it might as well be invisible."
Nexus still struggled on, and things did improve a little, managing to at least get what they made shown on a regular basis off tape in the bar. But in 2009, after 40 years, the Nexus name finally disappeared from the UEA, as the station was swallowed up by its younger sibling and, horror of horrors, became Livewire TV. And that seemed to be that. Or was it? After only a couple of years under the Livewire banner, the station re-emerged as UEA TV, streaming their programmes on YouTube.
"Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm here with UEA TV, and we're going to be reporting on the strikes today. We previously have a video about the strikes before Christmas, so go check that out on our YouTube channel. And today we're going to be finding out the difference between what went on before Christmas and what's going to happen now."
Phil Stewart was the station manager of UEA TV last year, and Rosie Johns is his successor.
"Especially during COVID, since I've been here, it's all been COVID, so we've had to use a lot of social media and relied a lot on people checking their phones and checking us, really. YouTube we do a lot of. We do lots of highlight stuff for Twitter. We stream on Twitch as well, which is exciting."
"I know I've met students in third year that went, what is UEA TV? I've never even heard of it. Because it's just not around on campus anymore. And as much as we can post on YouTube, you've got to go to YouTube, you've got to find the channel, you've got to subscribe. There's so many aspects that you need to be able to, you know, all the ducks need to line up in order for you to be able to see it, that it can get just lost."
Surprisingly, perhaps, Rosie thinks a solution to this could be found in taking inspiration from the Nexus era and actually having good old-fashioned TVs showing their programmes somewhere on campus.
"I think definitely, and it would make people, not everyone goes on social media and people can see what we're doing. I mean, like, I was terrified when I joined, and I would have loved to have had, like, to have been able to see something and been like, oh, I can go up and do something. I can go up and make a show."
"Nowadays, with phones and anybody can make videos and be a YouTuber. So UEA TV has to offer something on top of that."
"We did UEA Does Come Dine With Me." They want to see, like, their friends. So there's the novelty in that. But because everyone has a phone and everyone needs video to promote themselves, every society has a YouTube channel, every society has Instagrams where they post videos of, you know, promoting themselves. So we aren't really a go-to anymore when you need help promoting yourself."
Whatever the future may hold for UEA TV, there's little doubt that for many of those involved in its past as Nexus, being a part of the station was at least as important for their careers as the degrees they were actually at the university for in the first place. Ed Goodridge, Vince Rogers and Martin Heath all went on to work for the BBC after their time with Nexus.
"It certainly put a lot of us in line for a job later on, because certainly two or three of my colleagues ended up working at the BBC straight out of university or newspapers or independent television. And I myself went to work for the BBC, a few years later. And if it wasn't for Nexus, I wouldn't have done that. It wouldn't have sort of given me the skills and the knowledge and the enthusiasm for the media."
"We spent all day there and very little time on the actual degree. Clearly, it was what I kind of wanted to do with my career, and I didn't really realise it at the time. I was just sort of having the fun of doing it."
"It told me, this is something I can do. I actually have the ability to do this. I know what a news report should look like. I can interview people. I can ad lib." It was great fun, and it was my biggest single time waster while I was at university.
Nicola Daly.
"I work in film and television now. You know, I'm a cinematographer, so I shoot TV shows and feature films and commercials. And so Nexus is sort of my very humble beginnings, if you like. Many people spent a lot more time making, you know, Lad's Army or whatever, a show about their own student house than they did about reading their reading list for their degree that they were doing.
Arthur Smith.
Already I had some notion of what you could do on screen because of Nexus. So I would say it definitely had an impact on what my subsequent career was. It took quite a long while before I became a professional entertainer. I did a lot of rubbish jobs along the way.
Gurinder Chadha.
To have our own TV station was really something very special. You know, I did not belong in TV studios or on TV or in any of that world. I mean, I went along never ever dreaming that I would ever become a film director. What Nexus did for me was break down some of the barriers between TV and broadcasting. You know, it made it accessible for me. And so therefore, when I did venture into this area, you know, I wasn't daunted by it like a lot of people might have been in the past. You know, I'd already been in front of the camera. I might not have been very good at it in the tapes that you have. Hopefully I've improved. But that was the biggest thing, I think, is it just broke it all down for me. I wasn't scared of it and I wasn't intimidated by broadcasting.
We'll see you next week.
Have we got this? What's the last record?
Oh, yes.
This record, I'd say, is absolutely disgusting.
Well, it's particularly for Eric sitting down in the bar,
this
probably.
It's horrible, this record, so just don't listen to it.
You've been listening to Nexus, Norfolk's forgotten TV station on BBC Radio Norfolk. Special thanks for archive material are due to Stuart Campbell, Martin Heath, Mark Hodgson, Simon Litton, Andy Puddiford, Matthew Sylvester and Derek Williams. Thanks are also due to the University of East Anglia, the UEA Students' Union and UEA TV. The programme was presented and produced by Paul Hayes.